We have a few announcements before the service. First, our designated collection today is for the Pewaukee Food Pantry. All loose coins and bills and any check with Pewaukee Food Pantry written on the memo line will go to the food pantry. Next Friday, March 10th at 7 p.m., we hope you will join us for an important movie that matters. We'll be showing the film Milwaukee 53206, a one-hour documentary that chronicles the lives of those affected by incarceration in America's most incarcerated zip code. Through the intimate stories of three 53206 residents, we will witness the high toll mass incarceration takes on individuals and families that make up the community. The film not only examines Milwaukee's zip code 53206, but also illuminates the story of people from across the United States who live with the daily effects of mass incarceration. There will be a discussion after the film. At LCUUC, we have found a way to be responsibly, painlessly, and respectfully conduct our stewardship canvas without doing it in the service, without one-on-one meetings, and without people having to make and receive phone calls. It is a huge success, but there are some struggles with getting everyone to participate. Today at 11:30 is the last day of this fiscal year to show your support of this program. So, if you have not attended a stewardship session this year and you prefer to make extra work for your friends, or you prefer to have an awkward one-on-one meeting, or you prefer to go back to using the service time and phone calls, please do not attend the 11:30 meeting in Classroom 5. Today's order of service includes announcements of other upcoming church activities, and we look forward to everyone joining in. To stay current on services, events, and activities, check our webpage at lcuuc.org and like and follow us on Facebook. Please take a moment right now to silence all your electronic devices that you may have with you today before we begin our service. Thank you. Thank you.
You think that it's fairly harmless if you hate your body and wish that someone would just airbrush you. And no, there is no other you. There is no other house for your beating heart. And every no that you accept on your very flesh is an opening for less of your humanity, yours and someone like you. Every time you make yourself smaller in space or in value, your voice, your hands, your eyelashes are more hemmed in by a story about you that you never told. And this, while it may not murder you, is the opposite of life. Then you are less awake, less available for all the other erosions, flood upon landslide of lives that some people have forgotten to count. Yours, the others, the disabled kid down the street that everyone just calls wheelchair. The brown mama nursing a brown baby with sunshine of her nurture. Your body may be challenging, but in every way that it keeps you alive, it is the altar of my gratitude. Thank you for bringing your whole self into this space today. Come and let us worship here together. Please take just a moment to say hello or to introduce yourself to your nearby neighbors.
Lydia?
Kids are going to sing the chalice lighting song that they do, and they'll do it one time through, and then we'll join them the second time.
You got it.
Please rise in body or spirit and join in singing our opening hymn, number 128 in the gray hymnal, For All That Is Our Life. Welcome to Lake Country Unitarian Universalist Church. At LCUUC, we work to bring a message of hope and grace to an imperfect world. My name is Lois Romikas, and I'm the worship associate for this morning service. No matter who you are or where you have come from, you are welcome here. You can be tall or short or large or tiny. All bodies are unique, and all bodies are welcome here. As a UUA-recognized welcoming congregation, we welcome and affirm all people, regardless of who they love or what pronouns they use. Please join us for refreshments and conversation in our social hall after the service. And while you're there, stop by the welcome table to find out more about our church. We are glad you have chosen to be here today to celebrate and to worship with us.
One of the ways that we take care of our community is by contributing to the food pantries that exist around us, both financially and by collecting non-perishable food items. If you brought food items to share, will you please bring them forward at this point, or have a child bring them forward for you? And I invite the children up front for a story with our worship associate.
Today's story is Your Body is Awesome. Everyone has a body. We live in our body. It's like our house. Bodies are amazing instruments. They allow us to do all sorts of exciting things, like jumping up and down and dancing and splashing. Bodies are fun. Our body can make us feel good, like when we get a foot massage or snuggle up on the sofa or when someone strokes the back of our at bedtime. It is nice to have a body. Bodies are smart. They let us know what they need to stay well and feel good. Bodies don't talk to us. They use feelings. They send us messages about what they need through the way they feel. When we feel hungry, our body is telling us that it needs food. And when we feel full, our body is telling us it's had enough for now. And when we feel tired, our body is telling us it needs rest. And when we wake up feeling refreshed, our body is saying it's well rested. Try closing your eyes right now and travel down to your tummy. How do you feel in there? Is your stomach hungry? Is it full or is it neither? Let's just try that for a minute. Let's close our eyes. How do you feel? Are you hungry? Are you full? Are you you're hungry? Stretch out your toes and fingers in every direction. Try feeling your hands and your ears. Yeah, and when you breathe deeply, feel the way the air comes in through your nose and goes down into your lungs and then back the same way. This is your body. It's amazing. Can you feel like when you breathe, if you put your hands on your diaphragm, take a big breath and then blow out. It moves up and down. Your body is brilliant. It makes your heart beat and the blood pump through the veins. It digests your food and grows bigger and stronger every day. It makes your hair and nails grow. It heals your cuts and bruises, and it fights illnesses and infections. Your body is a good body. Bodies need a lot of care. They need nutritious food to grow bigger and stronger and the energy to do everything they need to do all day. They need lots of fun and activity in order to stay healthy and have strong muscles and bones. They need to get plenty of rest at night so that they can be refreshed and ready for action the next day. And they need time and sometimes help to heal when they get sick and hurt. Every body is different. Some bodies are taller and some are shorter. Some bodies are larger and others are smaller. Some have curly hair and others straight. Some have dark skin and others fair. Every body is unique. All bodies are good bodies. A tall body is not better than a short body, they're just different. Fat and thin bodies are also just different. Neither is better than the other. They're just different, like pink and green or tulips and daisies. It's important to feel good about your body and be happy about the way you are. It is also important to allow others to be happy about the way they are. We don't need to be like anyone else but ourselves. Be kind to your body and treat it with love. Your body is your friend, and you will live in it all your life. You notice she's giving her kind of a hug to her body. Can we give a hug to her body? Thank you.
And may I have today's lantern bearer? Where's Lydie? And if the rest of you would help me sing the children to their classrooms, the song is called For You Shall Go Out, and the words are in your order of service. May the light and love of our chalice lead you all today and every day. A young preacher was upset because his preaching had been so poor that the offerings at his church were very much down. And he went to an older minister for help, and the older minister told him, "Start the sermon off with a bang. You'll get their attention like this." And the older preacher stood up and said grandly, "I spent the best years of my life in the arms of a woman, not my wife." And the young minister went like this, and the older minister continued, "She was my mother." And back home, the young preacher decided, "Wow, I'm going to use that. It's a great line." So forging ahead at his next sermon, he started grandly with, "I spent the best years of my life in the arms of a woman, not my wife." And the whole congregation gasped, and the preacher paused, and he forgot the punchline. And after a few nervous minutes, he said loudly, "And I can't remember who she was." Needless to say, it didn't help the offering plate very much at all. Now, given that I know where I spent the best years of my life, and I'm not going to tell on myself like that in church, this morning's offering will now be given and received. Please remember our designated collection today is for Pewaukee Food Pantry. So your loose coins, your bills, and if you write Pewaukee Food Pantry specifically on the memo line, will go to the food pantry. Thank you so much for these gifts and for everything that you do for the life and the work of this community. One of the reasons that we do come together in beloved community here is to share both our laughter and our tears. And we do this in several ways. Before the service here at the candle table, you're always welcome to silently light a candle. But during the service, we speak aloud together, and the worship associate lights candles for us. So would anyone who has a joy or a concern to share, would you please raise your hand? One of the ushers will bring you a microphone.
This is Kirsten. I have a joy. I was out visiting my sister in L.A. and hopefully waiting for the birth of my son and nephew. I'm sorry, not my nephew and niece's twins. I missed them by a day. They were born this morning, two identical twin boys.
Oh.
This is Claire. Could you please light a candle for the Prangy Morgan family? They said goodbye to their dear kitty Stella this week.
This is Phil. Light a candle for Ruth, who is or was a longtime friend of Gina Magnus. She just passed away last night.
And we light our last candle today for all of those joys and all of those concerns which we hold deeply in our hearts, but which we've not spoken aloud here today.
A Liberal Theology of Sexuality by Gretchen Haley. When we talk about a liberal theology and ethic of sexuality, we need to start in our vulnerable, needy bodies in real life, in the struggle to navigate our embodied neediness with others in an embrace of the still possible mutual wholeness and transformation. Any theology of sex that doesn't start with the body fails to address those implicit and injuring messages that many of us and our culture carry. Early Christian thinkers, influenced by Plato, Aristotle, Hellenism, imagined life dualistically, body and soul separate. The soul was internal and of God, and the body was sinful and to be overcome in the service of saving the soul. A liberal theology anthropology, that is, an understanding of the human person, refuses to separate the parts in any way, but rather approaches humanity as one, one of body, mind, and spirit, all one, all connected, all alive, indivisible, all gifts of God and of the universe, all worthy of love and belonging, inherently so, we say. The body is not something to be overcome in this framework, but is rather to be honored, respected, and loved. Its regular workings and needs are not shameful or dirty or requiring purification and containment. Bodies are funny, mysterious, beautiful, messy, and changing, as humans are funny, mysterious, beautiful, messy, and changing. That bodies become hungry for food and for touch is simply true. Not good, not bad, just true. That bodies take pleasure in food and touch is also true. Still not inherently good or bad, just true. Most of all, bodies, as they are indivisibly life, humanity, and personhood, are vulnerable, as life is vulnerable. We go to great lengths to control and avoid this reality, to assert and appear otherwise, but all of us. All of us are so terribly vulnerable. We are susceptible to illness and injury, aging. Our hearts hurt literally and figuratively, often both, and often the distinction is imperceptible. Bodies that hurt are also can be healed. And because bodies and spirits and minds are one, the hurt may show itself in a particular place. Yet the pain will be felt everywhere, distinctly unlovely and undesirable. So too, healing everywhere, exquisitely consoled. And in the midst of all the ways that life tears us apart, sex can pull our pieces back together, tenderly, clumsily, beautifully. And when it does, whether in the context of casual or committed relationships, sex can be holy and sacred. Here ends the first reading.
This Spirit of life and love, may we find appreciation today and in our lives for our embodiment. We are physical creatures, mind and spirit and soul housed within our bodies. Our bodies, our physical form, allow us to experience the world. Taste chocolate chip cookies fresh from the oven. Touch the warmth and smoothness of a baby's skin. Sight the blooming colors of sunrise and sunset. Sound the laughter of friends and family. Smell the aroma of fresh bread. In particular today, may we find gratitude for our sexuality. May we be grateful for and appreciate our gender identity, our sexual orientation, our physical self. May we appreciate the pleasure, the intimacy, the connection that comes with and is part of our sexuality. And may we also remember that for many, sexuality can bring a variety of emotions. Shame and sadness and trauma, anger, pain, hurt. For all that the good and joy that embodiment brings, it also has its challenges. Aching joints, long-term health conditions, severe illness, aging, more. Today, as we honor the whole of ourselves, we also honor the whole spectrum of sexual experience, holding the joys in their richness and the sorrows in their fullness in our hearts. Please join me in a silent moment of meditation or the spirit of prayer.
The First Pair of Underpants by Robin Tanner. I wonder, did God's heart, I mean the lovey, mushy, endearing part of God, that part, that heart that I don't really believe in as a thing with pulses? Anyway, did that heart, did it break a little when God realized, oh no, they've made leaves into underpants? If God says things like underpants, and then the weight hit God, like the first time you watch your child feel self-conscious, hold back the loud belly laugh, or worse yet, bring down their eyes because their shoes you bought aren't good enough, did God's heart break just a little to see the beauty of freedom slip from their hearts as the heat and heaviness of shame washed over the two in the garden? Who now knew, not enough, no more naked, no more belly laugh, and for the first time wondered, am I good enough? Did God cry a little, maybe even turn away so they wouldn't see the tears? Here ends the second reading. Please rise in body or spirit and join in singing hymn number 100 in the gray hymnal, I've Got Peace Like a River. We will only be singing verses 1, 2, 3, and 6.
Some of you may have noticed we've been doing linked or roughly linked series of things. You know, in February we talked about love and different kinds of love. And as I ended the month, I transitioned that into the idea of sexual love and sexual misbehavior. Today we're going to talk a little bit about religion and sexuality, and we're finishing out that theme. And next week we're looking at the children and growing up as they transition from fifth and sixth grade. And it's always tough to talk about sexuality in church. We avoid the subject in general. Let me tell you, when you go looking for readings, wow. But I rush in where fools fear to tread, so here we go. Jesuit priest and philosopher Pierre Teilhard de Chardin said, "We're not human beings having a spiritual experience. We're spiritual beings having a human experience." You may have heard that before. And an unavoidable part of that human experience is our experience of our senses, of the sensual. As the kid's story said this morning, our body tells us what's going on around us. Our senses tell us what we're experiencing. Fetus information stimulate responses from the thinking brain and from the reacting nervous system. And we behave according to what we're being told by our sight, our smell, our sight, our hearing, our touch. Proprioception, the understanding of where our limbs are, gravity, all these play into how we move through the world. But it's more than that, right? We make decisions about which types of stimuli, which types of sensory input are good or right, and which types are bad or wrong. We don't just act and react. We judge. Now, in isolation, when there's nothing around you that can hurt you in any way, and without religion or a need for civilization, that would basically mean that anything that smelled and tasted nice would be good. Sounds that pleased your ear would be good. Touch that we enjoyed would be good. In a totally safe and supportive world, there would be billions of us running all over the planet yelling YOLO and seizing the day however we felt best. But as a species, the problem started when we started. Because we have a world where we need to work together to ensure survival, and where things want to kill and eat us, and other things exist to poison us. So from the beginning, our sensory input and our interpretation of that wasn't just about what pleases us. Poisonous berries may taste lovely, but it was about what told us something unpleasant or dangerous was about to happen. If you're out in the woods and you suddenly smell cucumbers, it's a lovely scent. Lovely. Run. It's telling you there's a copperhead within cuddling distance. Run away. A tiger's purring is a lovely sound. It's very relaxing. Unless you're in the cave with him. And bear skin feels great unless the bear is still wearing it. Our survival was based on being able to assign some kind of value to sensory input, moral value. And we became willing to accept that some input, while not dangerous in and of itself, was unfavorable because it meant something dangerous was about to happen. We learned to be afraid of a snake's hiss, of the tingling of poison on our lips. So what does this have to do with religion and sexuality? Oh, I am so glad you asked. And I wish poor Gus was here today because this would have been his thing. A German philosopher, oh, sorry, Lord, named Georg William Friedrich Hegel looked at religion and sensuality around 1800. And I'm going to read you a slightly longer quote. Bear with me. This is from Peter Kraft's Hodgins collection of Hegel's writing. He put a lot together. And the book itself is called G.W.F. Hegel, Theologian of the Spirit. Here's the quote. By its very nature, religion is not merely a systematic investigation of God, God's attributes, the relation of the world and ourselves to God, and the permanence of our souls. We could learn all this by reason alone. So religion isn't just that. We could be aware of this by other means. Nor is religious knowledge merely a matter of history or argumentation. Rather, religion engages the heart. It influences our feelings and the determination of our will. And this is so in part because our duties and our laws obtain powerful reinforcement by being represented to us as the laws of God. And in part because our notion of the exaltedness and goodness of God fills our hearts with admiration as well as feelings of humility and gratitude. And this is the important part. And so, religion provides morality and the wellsprings of its activity with a new and nobler impetus. It sets up a new and stronger dam against the pressure of sensual impulse. So what's religion there for, according to Hegel? It's there to give weight to the law. God said it, not humans. And to provide a barrier against our sensual impulse. Religion came into being for a couple of reasons. It helps to explain the world, right? The first time proto-humans couldn't understand what was going on, somebody invented religion. Those lightning flashes of the sky, God's arguing. Why did it snow? Oh, you know, God did something unspeakable upon us all. Religion allows a moral authority for the rule of law and the organization of society. You can rule or lead a group of people based on strength or intelligence. But it's much easier if God says the leader's the guy you want. It's much easier if it's not the leader speaking, but it's God or the goddess speaking through the leader. You can argue with Bill the leader. You can't argue with God. So Christianity, Judaism, and Islam all came into being during a period where sexuality and gender roles were carefully defined. They were tribal desert societies. These were not huge societies. In order to avoid bloodshed, interbreeding, it is important that boundaries be established in a small tribe. You have to know the rules for sexual interaction. And they have to be completely understood. The weakest member of your tribe has to get who he or she is allowed to reproduce with. Rights and responsibilities and inheritance all hinged on membership in your tribe, in your family line. And without rules, strong boundaries that God put in place, weak members of a tribe, women, children, weaker males, the handicapped, would have been preyed on. They would have been open targets. Uncontrolled population growth could starve a tribe. Too many abandoned children or widowed women, with no one wanting to marry someone else's woman, of course. So there had to be rules. Who could you touch? How can you touch them? What is your obligation to someone else has touched? Failure to have enough children could end a tribe or line. Children whose fathers were uncertain could destabilize an entire tribe into fighting factions over inheritance. Sheep, goats, money. They had to figure this out in a cut and dried black and white way, and they did. In other words, 2,000 years ago, you had to get the rules, you had to know who you could sleep with, know who you were allowed to marry, know what being married meant, know exactly what relationship and set of obligations every person in the community had to every other person. And these rules and these laws became parts of the Christian Bible, the Talmud, the Quran, and they've been passed down to us through our culture, through the religions of our culture, through our laws, and through what we accept as normal. So we've progressed from making personal moral judgments about sensual input and sensory input to letting other people direct us as to what these judgments should be. We're no longer deciding that that hiss means there's a snake, so it's the hiss is dangerous. Now we've got Bill the Great Leader telling us that sound is dangerous, that touch is dangerous. Our species' inclination to save itself from danger became a side door for our society to step in and assume partial control of how we feel about what our senses tell us. So in his book, Sex and God, How Religion Distorts Sexuality, I always wondered, why don't you tell us what you really think there? A writer named Daryl Ray says, religion tries to give us maps of sexuality that are no better than a 2,000-year-old map of my hometown. In addition, each religion also tries to convince us that their map is never wrong or inaccurate. Now, I don't know how many of you use a TomTom or Garmin or Google Maps or maps on your phone. What happens if you don't update it about every 6 months? You drive into a lake somewhere in the middle of Pewaukee, right? But we're using a 2,000-year-old map that was written when we were talking about 700 people and 90 billion sheep living in a very small area. Today's American sexual norms, the things you get told you're supposed to feel happy and good about, the ways you're told it's okay for you to be excited and happy in relationships, are based on those 2,000-year-old scriptural guidelines, and no matter your own religious upbringing, you have been impacted by them because they're written into our culture. And we can all name some of them. These sexual shoulds and shouldn'ts and rights and wrongs that we've inherited, some of them are actual laws, and some of them should be, don't get me wrong. And some of them are just established practice. But if I gave you a whole list, and I'm not going to, a whole big list of things and said, is this right or wrong according to society? I bet you would get it right 100% of the time. Just a few of the broader ones. People should only be married to one person openly at a time. Sister marriages are bad. Group marriages are bad. Partner swapping is bad. People should only have sex with someone they are partnered with, not random other people. Random people are bad. Sex should cause children, and birth control is bad. Pornography or lusting after people outside your relationship is bad. Men have more trouble controlling themselves than women. They are bad. Wanting sex is bad. Not wanting sex is bad. Don't cuddle and kiss people you aren't partnered with. Cuddling is bad because it leads to sex, which you can only have with your partner. And some kinds of sex are more right than other kinds of sex. Fetishes and kinks, well, they're right off the target. They will send you straight to hell. Express train, gasoline drawers. Every one of those things I've just said is based on a 2,000-year-old morality code that has, I don't know if it has any application to your life. It may have none whatsoever. Every one of those things is something where if the rest of your life is constructed correctly and meaningfully to accommodate those things, you may have a marvelous and perfect life, a wonderful and supportive and in all ways amazing life that violates absolutely nothing whatsoever. As Unitarian Universalists, we uphold the right of all people to engage in a free and responsible search for truth and meaning. And some of that meaning in life comes from your sensuality. You have the right to make your own responsible moral and ethical judgments about what literally feels right to you. Therapist Wendy Maltz says, sex is momentary and sex is transcendent. That's the paradox. The most intense physical sharing we experience with another person, and it's gone in a matter of minutes. And yet it connects us with that larger energy, some life force. Real, authentic intimacy leaves behind an inner glow that warms every aspect of our lives. Sex reminds us of our limitations and our expansiveness as humans. We are alone and we are together. And that very you-you idea of the transient and the permanent in one thing is echoed by poet Tara Hunter in her poem Wanting You. She says, how is it that our two bodies, made only of flesh and bone, ignite with this fire, yet do not burn? How is it that this cannot last, will disappear into the ether as our bones turn to dust and disappear into the earth? Sexual love does more than bring us together with the partner of the moment. It ties us to that fragile beauty of mortal life on this planet. Our acts are beautiful because they are not forever. On your worst day, on the day where you felt your most undesirable, your most unbeautiful, you were beautiful, and what you were doing was beautiful because it was not eternal, because it was so fragile and momentary. And given that, there is little that is more achingly painful than someone who can never have their desires met in that short, fragile life because they have been shamed by religion. Your obligation as a person of conscience and faith in all this is to engage in your search for meaning and fulfillment responsibly. And that's with a very large capital R and a bunch of other capital letters after it. That means decide for yourself and in all relationships, no matter how fleeting, no matter if it's 5 minutes, 5 days, or 5 years, there are three words you remember: safe and sane and consensual. That is the obligation which you owe to yourself and to the web of life which you are a part, to do no harm. Safe and sane and consensual. Consensual because your partner must be willing, adult, able to ethically and legally give informed permission for the interaction. Safe because both or all partners must be well informed of the medical and physical risks involved in whatever it is you plan to do. That includes things like disease. That's safe. It includes things like physical risk. Oh yeah, I want to try this. And by the way, if you put on those roller skates and we get in this rocking chair, you know there is a risk factor here. You talk it out. You explain to them what they are getting into. They explain to you what you are getting into. You get consent by saying, yes, I am married, and we have an open relationship, and absolutely, you can call my wife, and we can just Consent is informed consent. And sane, because consent isn't possible if the partner is in an altered state from drugs, alcohol, or profound mental illness or fear. Now, absolutely, someone with mental illness can consent. That's fine. I am not talking about having a diagnosis. I am talking about somebody in the grip of schizophrenia. They cannot say yes if they are not tied to the reality of this world at this moment. Safe, sane, and consensual. If you do that, you are behaving responsibly. Any other moral and ethical decisions are yours, not mine, not the church's, not your friend's. Because no matter how large your bed is, it isn't big enough to fit a church under the covers with you. Move the steeples out, they're poking you in the butt. Love who and however many you love with informed consent. Love them in ways that work for you both, or for you all by yourself. Enjoy what you enjoy. Enjoy it without shame. Be honest and transparent in your relationship or relationships. It's really okay. Be safe. Get consent from an oriented, willing, and legal partner or partners. Understand the risk of your interest to you and to your family. Make responsible choices together. These are the pieces that matter, not what Muhammad or St. Paul or Jesus or Moses would have thought about what brings you joy. So get the church out of your bed. I promise, I absolutely promise you will enjoy every inch of the extra room. Amen.
We extinguish this flame, but we carry its fire and passion into the world. Please rise in body or spirit and join in singing our closing hymn for this week, number 1017 in the Teal Hymnal, Building a New Way. Thank you.
Go into the world and love as you are called to love. Your calling is enough to make your love holy. Peace, and may it be so.